CBS Monday.
NCIS!
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent Island, you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii, Monday, starting at 9, 8 central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
You are listening to the Coast to Coast podcast on InsideCarolina.com. We are sponsored, as always, by Giant T-Shirt and GiantT-Shirt.com. I'm your host, John Siegley, joined by Sean Moran and Terrell McMillan. We are coming to you right after UNC was able to hold off the Yale Bulldogs 70-67 in the Dean Dome. Guys, we have a lot to cover in this podcast. We'll be talking about that game, also touching on Roy Williams' big, momentous, historic win tonight as well. Get into that a little bit and then wrap it up with some recruiting information as we usually do here on the Coast to Coast podcast. But starting with the Yale game, Sean, be honest, that last second three-point shot by Yale, did you think it was going in? Because I'll admit, I did.
When it left his hands, I definitely thought it was going in just based on, you know, kind of how the season had gone and how fitting that would be, but was very pleased when it fell short. Unfortunately, was not too pleased taking the 6.5 points and thinking UNC might win by 7 points or more. But I'll take the W going into the ACC conference play.
Yeah, I mean, this team will just take wins any way they can. Sherelle, it was another ugly type of game. UNC looked like they could be on the verge of actually potentially running away with this one, extending the lead out to double digits. But unfortunately, they're late in the second half. They just went cold from offense again. I mean, what were your overall takeaways from this game, really?
It kind of tracked to what they've been this season, which is they've had some small stretches where they played really well. I mean, 3, 4, 5 minute stretches. And then they've had some stretches where they've looked like, you know, maybe the worst team in the ACC. And I think you saw both of those in not just in the game, but within the second half. There was a stretch where they were running, you know, secondary break. They were pushing tempo. You know, they were getting the ball inside. They were, you know, crashing the boards. They were doing everything you would expect from a Carolina basketball team. And then there were stretches where they were turning it over, just trying to, you know, get the ball into the post, where they were missing defensive assignments and rotations, where they were giving up wide open shots, where nothing fell. So it just goes back to that inconsistency that they've had the entire season. It was a good win because it was a win. Frankly, they needed it, especially, you know, now they're starting ACC play. But kind of the whole night just felt a little strange because I think everybody is just concerned about Anthony Harris because he's been such a spark for UNC since he came back against Virginia. And you could really start to see some things developing as far as him as a player. You know, him and Francis really gave fans hope, not just for this season, but moving forward. So the possibility of that being taken away, and then you just feel for him because all the coaches have said how hard he works. All the players have said how hard he and Francis work to get back. So you hope it's not a major injury. So you have that, and then you have Roy Williams tying Dean Smith on the all-time win list. So it was just a really weird kind of feel. They got the win, but it didn't feel like a win because, you know, Harris got hurt, and then where Williams had the ceremony afterwards that he clearly didn't want to be involved with. So it was just kind of a strange night. But in the end, I think they're thankful for the win.
Yeah, watching it on TV, I thought that Coach Williams may do like a speech, but I think it was pretty evident he was in no mood to really sit there and bask in the accolades. Sean, looking at the box score here, I think the biggest positive for me was that Justin Pierce had his best game in a Tar Heel uniform. And they really needed him tonight because, unfortunately, Armando Bacot had yet another poor game, only 2 points, and those both came from the free throw line, 0 for 5 from the field. If UNC is going to be successful this year, they must get production on the inside. But, unfortunately, today they really were inconsistent outside of Pierce. So, looking at this Yale win, I mean, what do you think the team can build upon moving forward, or are we just a little bit too far gone in the season to really hope that there could be some drastic changes?
Well, I definitely don't think there are going to be any drastic changes, but I think there were definitely some positives. I mean, you brought it up in terms of how Pierce played, and you go back to the first half, and you know, one thing that stuck out to me was how aggressive a lot of the team was in attacking the basket. So you had Francis really putting pressure on the defense, getting into the paint. You know, you had Pierce coming off the bench, and I thought he was really ready to go from the get-go. And I think we've talked about it a few times, whether it's a CAA team or now an Ivy League team, he seems to get up for that level of play a little bit more. But to his credit, he was ready to play from the beginning. And then you had Harris attacking, and you had Garrison Brooks being really the first person that was aggressive offensively. And he finished with a double-double and kind of, you know, when they got down 11-2 at the beginning, was really a catalyst in helping UNC come back early. But Pierce, you know, he didn't shoot the ball, went 0-for-2 from the three-point line, but was really aggressive with his cuts, had three offensive rebounds, and was just, you know, even, you know, made some nice passes and was forcing the defense to really guard him when he attacked the basket. So definitely no drastic changes, but some things to enjoy and things that hopefully they can build on going forward, because when you put pressure on the defense, that just opens things up for Brandon Robinson at the three-point line, and it opens up stuff for the bigs as well. So hopefully they can continue to do that, even though Harris was a big part of that.
Yeah, let's talk about Brandon Robinson, because I actually really liked the fact that he was not afraid to just shoot the ball tonight. He ended up with 20 points. He did foul out, but he really took it upon himself to be the scoring drive for UNC. Sherelle, looking at his play tonight, it's pretty evident that until they get Cole Anthony back, this team just must have someone not be afraid to shoot the ball from beyond the outside. How confident are you that Robinson can be that guy until Cole Anthony comes back?
Oh, I think you said it all. I mean, with North Carolina's size advantage inside, a lot of times getting a good shot, you know, yields an offensive rebound. So part of it is just getting the shot up. And, you know, it's weird watching a team that some guys look petrified to shoot. You know, it looks like great ball movement, but what it really is guys passing out open looks. You'll see the ball swing from one side, swing to the other, then it'll be a pump fake and a drive. Then they'll swing it to the other side and a pump fake and a drive. At some point, you got to shoot the ball. And I think Brandon Robinson finally realized that, hey, you know, nobody else is going to do it. Somebody has to do it. And some of his shots didn't look great, but you know, he kept shooting, and eventually he kind of got into his rhythm. He's been a good shooter for most of his career, coming, you know, obviously at a smaller level. I think he didn't take many last year. So, you know, I just think that it was good for him to be aggressive, and other people need to follow suit. Now, I'm not talking about just going out and checking it whenever you have a chance, but if it's in the flow of the offense, if it's, you know, an open shot, take it. You know, Coach Williams always talks about how he didn't recruit you to go over and stay, you know, sit on the bench or go over and wave a towel. He recruited you because he thinks you can play. So go out, you know, and take the shot, make it. So I think it was good to see Brandon Robinson be so aggressive. I thought Justin Pierce's aggressiveness was good as well. Granted, it wasn't always from the three-point line, but just in general, I thought he played a much more aggressive game in how he cut and how he screened and how he rebounded and how he finished around the basket. So those two guys, I think, really had good nights.
And then you talked about the Harris potential injury there, Sherelle. I don't want to speculate on that too much. He had a good game tonight. I think his biggest contributions, though, were on defense, where he was really, really hustling. He was aggressive also in that first half. Sean, looking at the guard play, though, specifically of Jeremiah Francis, I think UNC is really seeing what they have in him being a lead guard. So now that, you know, we can start looking ahead a little bit to when Cole Anthony will be returning from his injury. We've talked about it in the past, but now I think that we have a lot more footage on Francis. How do you see he and Anthony coexisting in the backcourt?
Well, I think they can form a good duo because I think, you know, I think we talked about it last time, but I think it'll allow Anthony to get some better shots, and all the pressure won't be on him to really do everything on offense, which he was definitely tasked with before. Now you have Francis, who made the biggest play of the day, you know, attacking the basket from the left side and getting the and one. So you know, I think he feels pretty confident that he can get to the basket and put pressure on the defense. And now you have two guys that can handle the ball and can put pressure on the defense. So I think, you know, they should be able to play pretty well. It'll definitely take some time for them to get used to it because they haven't played it all together besides for that UVA game. And that was only a few minutes, but I think it can lighten the load for Cole and hopefully help him, get some better shots, because when he was, you know, the last few games he was playing, granted it was going against two of the top defenses in the country, he was having to take a lot of tough shots, whether it was the step backs or shots in the paint. And now hopefully this can free him up. And now you have two guards that can attack and are legit scoring options.
Let's go ahead and take a quick commercial break to talk about our friends at Giant T-Shirt and GiantT-Shirt.com. They are longtime sponsors of this podcast, great friends of Inside Carolina. Hopefully everyone got a gift from Giant T-Shirt in your stocking or just wrapped up under the tree this year for the holidays. If you didn't, you can always go to their location there on Franklin Street, where they have an incredible selection of everything you could want for the Tar Heel fan in your family. They have the gear from every single sport that you could possibly think of. They have great accessories as well. So make sure that you head on down to Giant T-Shirt there on Franklin Street. You can enjoy their absolute top-notch customer service. If you can't make it to Chapel Hill, though, you can always go to GiantT-Shirt.com, shop their same great selection, get that same great customer service there. And remember that if you are a subscriber to Inside Carolina, you get 10% off of your orders. You can get that 10% off code from the Tar Pit Premium Message Board, the Basketball Premium Message Board. So that's Giant T-Shirt and GiantT-Shirt.com, your place to go for Carolina gear. All right, so let's go ahead and switch over to the Roy Williams part of the podcast, guys. Tonight, he reached the 879 mark of wins, a truly historic thing, matching the great Dean Smith. I thought it was very cool that Dean Smith's son was in the Dean Dome. And let's just really take a moment here, I think, to appreciate everything that the Tar Heel fans have gotten in Roy Williams. I mean, he's won the three championships. Even though today, Sherelle, he was probably not really in the mood to, like I said earlier, kind of accept all the accolades. That's really just not his style overall, I don't feel like, though.
Oh, not at all. And I think part of it is Coach Smith was like a father figure to him. I think everybody kind of knows his family history if you're listening to this podcast. And to him, it probably just doesn't feel right to have the same number of wins as Coach Smith. He feels not worthy. He feels like he shouldn't be in the same discussion. So I think that probably is where some of the hesitation came from, as far as the post game ceremony goes. And, you know, just overall, I think what Roy Williams is, and Brian Ives, former IC intern who now works for ESPN, tweeted out, he really is underappreciated. And I think a lot of it is jealousy, because Roy Williams was an assistant at North Carolina, and, you know, obviously he had to work hard, but it was still North Carolina with Eddie Fogler and Bill Guthridge and Coach Smith. And then his first job as a head coach was at Kansas, you know, a blue blood where basketball was basically invented to some degree. And then he leaves Kansas, could have any job in the world, you know, was offered NBA jobs, had any job he wants, and left Kansas and went to North Carolina, arguably the two top programs of all time. So I think a lot of the reason that people don't really see him as a great coach, like some of the other, you know, top five, top 10 coaches that people usually throw out there on lists, is because those were his only two jobs. What they don't realize is that, you know, there's a lot more pressure to coach at Kansas and Carolina than there is at, you know, I'm going to pick on somebody, you know, Tennessee Tech and Western Kentucky. There's imminent, you know, just so much more pressure to succeed at those two jobs, and to do it the way he's done it at almost an 80% clip, you know, winning his games, is really incredible. And people just, I guess they think, just, you know, he just rolls the ball out there. That was the common thing. But throughout his career, you know, especially in North Carolina, he's shown that he can win in different ways. He has shown that he can take talented players who are already there, add a piece like Marvin Williams, and win a title. He's shown he can recruit, you know, a top, you know, the top class in the country, and use those guys to win a championship. And then he's shown that he can do it with guys who necessarily aren't the top tier one and done NBA players, who are 3 to 4 year guys who, you know, rank in the top 25 to top 50. So he's won championships three different ways in North Carolina, and just has been successful pretty much every year, but maybe one year in his entire coaching career. And I just think he's really underappreciated.
Sean, let's talk about the coaching job that Roy Williams has done this year. But before you get to that, though, go ahead and give your take on just, you know, like Sherelle put out, I think, an excellent just summary there. And really, he hit all the important parts about what Coach Williams has done for UNC. So let's get your thoughts on that aspect of him and then move on to what he's how he's having to coach this year's team so differently than he has in the past.
Well, I don't think there's much more to add after Sherelle so eloquently talked about Roy Williams and what he's meant to UNC. But, you know, to me, it still feels like yesterday when he was coming over to North Carolina. And I remember being in my dorm room when he did. But, you know, when you look at his overall record and the fact that he's been at UNC longer than Kansas is still extremely mind-boggling to me. But, you know, as Sherelle mentioned, he started with a team that was extremely talented but had never won, and second year won a championship, and then was just reeling off, you know, five-star recruits, kind of culminating with the 2009 championship. And then really, you know, this decade, it's been, you know, pretty interesting to see the ebbs and flows of how the teams have done. Obviously, the dip of 2010, but then getting right back a few years later and the back-to-back championship appearances, and now to kind of close out, you know, the decade. Right now, it's a tough season with, you know, offensively his worst team that he's ever had, and you know, I think you're seeing him try to adapt and try different lineups, and that's going to be a common theme throughout the ACC, especially, you know, with Cole coming back. Once again, he hasn't played really with Francis, and now you're still mixing in a team. You know, I think for Roy, you can go through his records and you see the tempo and the offensive rebounding, and the game of basketball has changed a lot, but his core tenets have still stayed the same, and UNC still is superb at the things that he really, really focuses on. And while this year is definitely going to be a trying one, I think, you know, taking joy in kind of the smaller achievements, you know, as the games go on, will help everybody get through it. And then, you know, we'll be talking about recruiting in a little bit. And that's one thing that kind of was dark for a few years. And now UNC is back, you know, challenging the other, you know, Dukes and Kansases of the world, you know, for the five-star recruit. So overall, you know, it's pretty remarkable what he's done and how long he's been able to do it, and hopefully has a few more years of doing it at that level.
Before we get on to the recruiting, let's go around real quick, and I want to hear everyone's one memory of Coach Roy Williams. So when you hear his name, what is the image or sequence of events that pops into your mind? Sean, let's hear from you. Can put you on the spot, man.
Ooh, that's a tough one, but I'll go back to 2005 and just the Illinois game and kind of getting the monkey off of his back, because that was, you know, obviously what everybody was saying was, you know, he's a great coach and has all these wins, but he can't win at all. And coming from UNC, having Kansas lose to Syracuse, he was able to get that monkey off his back pretty quickly. And you know, then we've been able to see two more championships. So for me, it's just going back to that 2005 game and kind of what led up to it and the challenges, and then just kind of the joy, you know, after the game that you could see from him and the team.
All right. What about you, Sherelle? What's your one memory that you have of Coach Williams?
It goes back to 2003. So I was a student. I was a junior when he got to North Carolina. And I was heavily involved in the athletic department. And the first late night with Roy on campus, it's hard to describe exactly how that felt. It was just celebratory. It was, we ended up calling it Roy Day that day, just because everyone was just so excited. Because, you know, the early 2000s were a really, really, really difficult time. I think some people forget exactly how far Carolina basketball had fallen in the grand scheme of things. And there was a large contingent of people who thought the program was going to end up like Indiana, which is nationally relevant for a long time. And then a blip here or there, and then essentially nothing for 30 years. And when Roy Williams said yes that day in April 2013, everyone was excited. But to see him on campus and interacting with people, I remember the buzz around campus, the feeling. It was just pretty amazing. You knew that there was hope. You knew that North Carolina basketball was going to be back and was going to be fine. And, you know, less than 2 years later, he had already won the national championship and off he went. So that, to me, just that first late night with Roy Day in October 2003 was something.
So when you talked about, you know, the student aspect of it, that got me thinking. It's not a memory I have because it didn't happen to me, but apparently when kids would camp out for tickets to, you know, get in the risers and everything, Coach Williams would bring them donuts for the early morning people. So yep. I always thought that was a really cool touch.
Every Saturday morning.
Yep. Back before the lottery when you actually, you know, had to work to
get in the Stone Ages when dinosaurs roamed the Smith Center.
Well, I'll give my favorite memory real quick, and it was the celebratory, I guess, event you could call it, in 2009 when the team came in after flying back home from winning that championship. It was so huge, and I think that Coach Williams, he really loved that 09 squad. I think it was, you know, probably, I don't know if I go as so far to say it was his favorite, but I do think that those kids have a special place in his heart. And just hearing him give the speech and seeing what it meant to him to win two titles to match Dean Smith, that was really, really cool. So let's go ahead, though, and take our last commercial break. And when we get back, we will wrap this podcast up with some recruiting talk. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
And we're back with the Inside Carolina podcast. John Siegel here with Sean Moran and Cheryl McMillan. Guys, let's go ahead and cover the holiday tournaments that have been going on over the last week or so. We talked about these before the holidays actually began. There were a lot of updates that came out of these. Sean, you are going to be our expert guy when it comes to these. Where do you want to start at, man? Like, which tournament do you think really was the one that UNC fans, if they're going to go back and maybe take note of, what was the one that you would say?
That's a tough one. You know, I guess it would be the John Wall, just because it was in Raleigh, and Ben Sherman did a great job covering that. You know, they had Puff Johnson as well as De'Ron Sharp in the tournament. You know, I think, unfortunately, you know, Montverde is a super team, and you know, they didn't really get challenged, and you didn't really get to see, you know, Sharp in a extremely competitive setting. But going back to the City of Palms, which last time we were on the podcast, they were going into the championship game and they won, and Sharp played pretty well in that one. You know, I think one thing that we've kind of talked about with Puff Johnson has been Hillcrest and just kind of what a mess they've been all year, from coaching to playing style, you know, players on the team in terms of fit. And I think people that were able to either watch it online or watch the games in person probably saw that, where I think Puff Johnson played fairly well, shot the ball well from three and rebounded. But, you know, really his main role is kind of a spot up shooter and to get rebounds. And you have guys that are not really pass first guys on his team, and ones that are looking to shoot and get theirs. And I think it'll be kind of a long season for him. But the fact that he did shoot well and did get on the boards, I think, is a positive, and will definitely be something that UNC will need going forward. And then finally, you have RJ Davis, who played really well at the City of Palms, and then just yesterday was playing Paul VI up in Delaware, And Taylor did a great job in terms of video as well as analysis on RJ's performance. And overall, it wasn't a great one. You know, didn't shoot the ball that well, didn't make any threes. But, you know, Paul the Sixth, for people that don't know, they're ranked, well, before that game, they were ranked number one in the Washington Post, so number one in the D.C. area. And they have some really talented guards. And from what I saw, you know, it was kind of a, you saw his strengths, really being able to handle the ball under pressure because they were really putting pressure on him. I think he had two assists, but as Taylor mentioned, and as I saw in kind of the replay, there's numerous nice passes that he had that the teammates just didn't hit. So overall, it was, you know, another positive for him. And I think, you know, for him being one of the latter ones to commit, I think he's going to be really special, especially knowing that he most likely will be at UNC for more than 1 year. So that's kind of a lot, but I think it was a good opportunity for people in the area to see Dayron and Puff play. And then, you know, we'll see Montverde on TV definitely going forward.
Yeah, let's talk about RJ Davis just for a second here, because like you mentioned, Sean, he didn't shoot that great in the game that Taylor Viplis covered for Inside Carolina. But at the same time, he is just one of these guys that it is always, always, always going to attack. Sherelle, when you watched him live, you said the exact same thing. And I'm just really excited for this kid to come to Carolina, because for a UNC squad that needs some scoring from the outside, scoring inside, scoring basically everywhere, I mean, RJ Davis looks like the type of guy that could come in and really help out on that end of the floor from day one.
Yeah, him and Caleb Love, I think, are both capable of that. And Davis, you know, it's funny because each stretch of his career, kind of he's starting to show more and more people what he can do. So, for example, like when we went up to New York to see him last month or earlier this month, all starting to run together. His coaches talked about how everything that you've seen the last 6 months, we've seen the last, you know, couple of years. And now it's like everything that we saw in the last 6 months, kind of the national audience is seeing over the last 2 months. And soon, you know, over the next few months, more people will see what he's been doing. And I think the thing for him is just consistency. Like you pretty much know, part of it is his team makeup, but you pretty much know he's going to give you 22 to 30 points every game, that he's going to shoot decently well. You know, his shooting does need to continue to improve. I think part of it is just he's required to do a lot on offense for his team. He and Adrian Griffin and Duke commit. So that's part of it. But, you know, he's got to improve his shooting. And as we talked about before, when people come into North Carolina, you know, typically just because it's faster, the players are bigger, it's just a little more difficult to shoot well as a freshman. And so he's going to have to find other ways to contribute when his jump shot isn't falling. And I think that's really the part that I've been most impressed by, is that even when he's not hitting threes, he's found ways to score inside the paint, really creative ways considering his size. So yeah, it's just another scorer that they'll be able to put out there, hopefully with players like Anthony Harris and Jeremiah Francis and Linky Black, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, guys, so to wrap it up, let me get, Sean, your thoughts on who was the most impressive player that you saw over the holiday tournaments. If there were a couple of them, that's fine. But just give us a quick rundown of who really stood out to you just overall.
Overall, that's a good question. I mean, from a UNC perspective, RJ Davis, I got to watch a lot of him watching the streaming version of City of Palms, and I hadn't seen that much of him beforehand, just from a overall game perspective. So for me, it was great to see him play. You know, overall, you see Montverde, and it's kind of incredible just to watch them, and they're battling IMG in the championship of the City of Palms. But, you know, Kate Cunningham, he didn't even have that good of a game in the championship, and he still just controlled the pace and hit big shots when he needed to. And, you know, he's going to be a great player next year at Oklahoma State, and obviously UNC was after him pretty heavily. And one, I'll kind of go off topic real quick. One guy that didn't make any waves during the holiday season is Zaire Williams, who was offered, you know, just over about a year ago from UNC, and you know, things have cooled off with him and his overall recruitment in UNC, even though he's made it to campus a few times. But He is back playing tonight, his first game after sitting out really the first semester due to transfer reasons. So they're playing Rancho Christian in California, which has Eric Mobley, another top five player. So should be a good game on the West Coast. But overall, I'd say Montverde in terms of a team, and then RJ in terms of UNC guys.
All right, good stuff. Sherelle, did you have anything to add, or are we good to go ahead and wrap this one up?
No, I think Sean nailed it.
All right.
I will say, I think we counted it, and there are only a couple of college teams who have more top 100 players than Montverde, to speak to Sean's point.
I was actually going to ask, like, if Montverde could play in college, they would probably actually be a halfway decent team, like, this season.
You know, I don't like to do that, like, doing the comparison up, but I think they would be. I mean, they've got a guy who's going to be, you know, a top two or three pick in the draft. They have really good players committed to really good schools. It's incredible to watch, like Sean said.
All right, guys. Well, thank you a lot for speaking with me tonight. We will go ahead and wrap this one up, but we will be back next week for our weekly Coast to Coast podcast. So for now, y'all have a good rest of your night.
All right. Happy New Year.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
New NCIS, Monday, 9/8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.